Hey guys, welcome back to Roundtable Rundown. I'm Gideon Hyman here with Alex and Will, and today we are very lucky to be with our special guest, Mr. Pedro Mora of The Athletic.
We're really excited to have Mr. Mora here. He is a beat writer for the Dodgers on The Athletic, and I want to talk a little bit to you, Pedro, about kind of The Athletic and what its philosophies are and why you made the decision about a year ago or something like that to switch from general newspapers to The Athletic.
Yeah, it's a decision that a lot of my peers have confronted themselves over the last year to 2 years, and for me it was a fairly simple calculus. It's a startup venture, right? And it's new. There's not a lot of name recognition. Explaining it to parents, things of that nature can be confusing. But for me, I felt just as good or better about the potential longevity of this thing, of The Athletic, as I did about most newspapers in this country, because there's just not a lot of evidence that newspapers in their current form are functioning. So for me, yes, it was risky, but staying with the old thing was risky too. And so that was the selling point. And obviously there's a lot of freedom and flexibility that they offer that newspapers don't. Right. I no longer have a nightly deadline constraining me. There's just a lot more freedom. I'm really happy with my choice so far. And I think a lot of my peers who made the same decision are as well.
Right. And, so since you came to talk to us at USC over the summer, The Athletic has obviously grown a lot since then. What would you say, or have there been any noticeable changes during the expansion of The Athletic from, the summer until now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that, we're going to start to normalize our coverage a little bit more. This year it was a bit touch and go. There were fewer designed plans for how our coverage is going to go across the board, and there's value in that. But I think as we get together and sort of formulate a plan, we're doing more of these things called blitz weeks, where three or four times a year there's a week where we just bludgeon readers with all sorts of features that we plan out to
right.
plan to come out in this one week to generate a lot of subscriptions and attention. And I think that that's been pretty successful so far. We have another one coming up in a week here. And I think that didn't happen a year ago. The first one was in July or August. Mm-hmm. And so there's just planning mm-hmm. is probably the biggest thing mm-hmm. that we're doing more of.
That's great.
Very cool. Hi, Pedro. This is Alex. I was wondering, I'm a huge baseball fan myself, specifically a Dodger fan. And so I was wondering, because obviously it is not easy to follow baseball. There's so many games and they are longer games compared to other professional sports. So what inspired you to become a writer for the MLB? And what was your passion for baseball, I guess?
I was obsessed with baseball growing up. I fell in love with it. My parents are immigrants from Brazil. They didn't know anything about baseball. But I fell in love with it watching Vin Scully on TV, in the Southern California suburbs, not far from where you guys are. And became obsessed with the baseball cards, with the stats, the almanacs, all that sort of stuff. And I really, what appealed to me, I think, more than anything was the quantifiable nature of it. And then I started getting to my teen years and it became even more quantifiable, sabermetrics and different data. I really love the idea, and I still do love the idea, that you can define the value of, what happens on a baseball field more than you can in life and more than you can in other sports. I know in other sports are catching up, it certainly seems like. I don't pay that much attention to football or basketball nowadays. But when I do, I see all sorts of metrics and whatnot in football that were unheard of even 6 or 7 years ago, it seems like. And so, that's great, but I think that baseball, just
certainly
the fact
at the forefront.
That it's simplified, it's not 11 on 11 like football is, it's always going to be harder to isolate. I used to cover college football, and I would repeatedly try to understand, what made an offensive lineman good. I probably asked that question of 40 people, coaches, players, staffers, and then I never really understood what exactly it is besides bulk and hand positioning. And I think so much of a football game is defined by what happens on the offensive line. I just felt like I was always watching something I didn't quite understand. With baseball, I know that there are things I don't understand as well, but I feel like I get a lot greater of a percentage of it.
That's great.
So one of the things I also wanted to mention is, I know with old newspapers and where you worked before, it's very difficult to, measure how your articles are doing or how any of that is translated. But now that you're with The Athletic, it's kind of like a whole different scenario there. But I was wondering still, like, how you can measure success after writing that article. And is it, like, based on the number of clicks you get? Is it based on the feedback you get from other people? Like, how do you quantify success in this field?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that we're still trying to answer that. You know, there are things, there are metrics that we use. You know, we do see how many subscribers see each story that we publish. We do see how many new subscribers each story generates. You know, I think those two things, you know, are pretty valuable. And at the bottom of each story, you guys have probably seen there are three smiley faces that you can click that delineate, you know, how you felt about the story.
Right.
Those three things in tandem tell a lot. But I think that it would be short-sighted to only view those things as a metric of success. I think you have to know that the quality of a story that you wrote, and use that as, you know, one of your primary sources of judgment. Because, you know, there are some stories that are just always going to attract attention. You know, if it deals with controversy, you're going to generate views and subscribers, and that doesn't mean it was a good story in itself. It just had a lucky topic, right? So that's important to always remember. You know, I wrote a story about one of the better stories I wrote this season, I thought, was about a prospect in the Dodgers minor league system who's having serious problems, you know, learning how to hit, but had all the athletic ability in the world. And because he's a prospect and not a major league player, it generated very little attention.
Right.
Not that many subscribers clicked on it. And that, you know, that doesn't mean that it was a bad story, but what it did tell me is that I'm not going to focus much on prospect stories going forward because the fans don't really care. They want to read about the major leaguers. That didn't tell me the quality of the story, but it told me that it wasn't a success for our adventure. There just wasn't enough interest.
I see.
Right. And Will actually writes for our school paper here, and I'm sure you can agree that a good story comes from, you have to be passionate about it. You can't just write about what you think will be perceived as a good story.
Definitely. That's probably the most essential part.
So you have worked for the OC Register, the LA Times, and now The Athletic. You've had a lot of experience in sports journalism. What would there be any piece of advice you could give to our listeners who are prospective young sports journalists?
The thing that I advise people to do more so than anything else is to read other sports writing that you admire, things that you care about, because like we were saying, you have to be passionate about it. And if you're not passionate enough to read, then I don't think you should pursue this as a career, honestly,
right.
Because that's what's going to make you better. I mean, you're not going to be good unless you read, you know, 20, 30 stories, you know, as often as you can. I mean, just like when you have an hour, just go in and read. You know, it's so easy to read things.
Sure.
I mean, it's incredibly easy. It's easier now than ever before.
Sure.
And so, the way to improve is just to read and replicate. You know, when I was starting, you know, I wasn't very good at all. But what I could do was, in times of crunch, when I had a deadline or something like that, I could always replicate what I had seen before, sort of like a weak imitation, but at least made it serviceable, right? Because I had read so many stories. You know, by the time I was writing baseball stories, I had read thousands and thousands and thousands of newspaper baseball stories. So it allowed me to understand what it might look like, and at least, you know, at the very least, provide something that is okay. You know, and because before you're going to be great, you have to be okay.
Right,
right.
And a lot of people can't even get to okay. So, you know, striving to first get to serviceable or even mediocre is a legitimate goal,
right.
Especially when you're a teenager, right? Like, there's no teenager in America who's a great sports writer. So, if you're trying to get there, you have to start at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I have a quick question for you as a diehard Dodger fan myself about the Dodgers offseason so far, and with the the Reds trade and the potential moves the Dodgers are making, and obviously they've been connected to many headliners like Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, you name it. What do you think the expectations are for the Dodgers next year, and how do you see the rest of this offseason playing out?
Are you talking about expectations within the organization or from fans?
I would say from a fan and from your expectations.
Well, I think that fans want them, it seems clear to me, fans are clamoring for big additions. They want Harper, they want Machado, they want Realmuto, they want all of you.
Right.
So that's not going to happen, obviously. I don't think the Dodgers are going to get any of those three. I think the Dodgers have correctly assessed that they're much better already than their divisional rivals. And so therefore it doesn't really make all that much sense for them to make a huge push right now. You know, Vegas just came out with some odds. The ones I saw yesterday, the Dodgers are favored to be 13 wins better than the second best team in the NL out west.
Wow.
Colorado Rockies.
Right. Yeah, they're getting
already
better.
And that's with their team before they acquired Russell Martin. So it's, you know, they just don't really need to make huge additions. You know, they're projected as a 95-win team right now. If it turns out, you know, in July that they need another starter, that they need another reliever, you know, they have the prospects to go out and get that guy.
Right,
right.
Guys. So they don't really feel the pressure to make an addition. Mm-hmm. They don't. And I understand that fans want that. The fans feel like the team has come from the short world, the back-to-back World Series titles, right?
Right.
And so that's frustrating in that regard. But also, you know, they could not make another addition and win the World Series. That has happened, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
95
sure.
win teams do win World Series.
Right, exactly.
Of course, there are ways to get better. But the way that they've built this organization is that they're in position to be pretty good every year for many mm-hmm. years to come. Right? They have prospects,
right.
they have young players on cheap contracts. And so they're not going to expand that when they don't need to get an easy spot in the playoffs. You know, that's already basically locked up the way they see it, the way the industry sees it.
Right. So a lot of our listeners may not know about these prospects you're talking about, guys like Alex Verdugo or Kieber Ruiz or Will Smith. Can you talk about how we think that, especially Alex Verdugo, now that the outfield is a little more open, how we think that they are going to progress and possibly contribute to this Dodger team?
Yeah, Alex Verdugo is an interesting prospect in that he's not he doesn't really have star potential. He's a young kid, 22 years old from mm-hmm. Tucson.
Right.
He doesn't have star potential, but what he is he's like a guaranteed solid player.
Right.
As far as close to guaranteed as a guy who's never fully done it at the major league level can be.
Right.
Right. Scouts who see him say he's, you know, an above average defender, a great contact hitter, a little bit of power, you know, really athletic. Could probably play center field, but the Dodgers don't need him to do that. So that's what they have there. And I think they're going to give him a lot of time in right field this season now that they've traded away both Matt Kemp and Yasiel Puig.
Right.
The other two prospects you mentioned are both catchers, Will Smith, Kieber Ruiz.
Yes.
It seems like with their acquisition of Russell Martin, the Dodgers intend to give those guys the catching jobs here pretty soon. I don't know if that's in 2019. It's probably in 2020. But both of them are believed to be pretty good defenders, and Kieber Ruiz has got a lot of potential as a hitter. He's only mm-hmm. 20 years old. He's done he's done well up to Double A. He's sort of like he's the closest thing to a phenom prospect in the system. He's the guy mm-hmm. who could be a star. Will Smith is more of a safer choice. He's hit really well in the minor leagues, but he doesn't really have the body of a great catcher. He's kind mm-hmm. of a small guy. So I think between those two catchers, it's very likely the Dodgers have their starter, of the future in the system.
That's amazing. Good. Yeah, it's very exciting to hear for Dodger fans, and I'm excited to see how the season plays out, and I think that they'll be very competitive and compete for another World Series this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Mora, I think that's all we have for you today, but thank you so much. It was so interesting talking to you about the Athletic and your career and the Dodgers, and we really, really appreciate you doing this for us.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thank you for having me on, and feel free to reach out anytime. I'd be happy to do it.
Thank you. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank
have
you.
A good rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, guys, that's all we have for you today. Hope you enjoyed this interview with Pedro Mora of The Athletic, and hope you guys tune in next time where we hopefully have another great interview for you guys.
Go Dodgers.
See you guys.
Thanks, guys.